ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 33. Yatra ime sad asat rupe patishyade svasamvida avidyaya atmani Kute iti tat Brahma darshanam. Yatre me sad asad rupe pati shidhe svasam vidha Avidya yatmani krite iti tad brahma darshanam yatre me sad asad rupehi patishide sva samvida avidya yatmani krite Iti tad brahma darshanam Yatre me sad asad rupehi Patishyade sva samvidha Avidya yatmani krite Iti tad brahma darshanam Please chant. Yatre me sad asad rupe
patishyade sva samvidha avidya yatmani krite iti tad brahma darshanam yatre me sad asad rupe patishyade sva samvidha
Ladies, please. Ladies, please. Anyone else want to do the verse? No? Synonyms. Yatra, whenever, ime, in all these, sat asat, gross and subtle. Rupe, in the forms of Pratishyade, on being nullified. Sva samvida, by self-realization. Avidyaya, by ignorance. Atmani, in the self. Krite, having been imposed. Iti, thus. Tat, that is. Brahma darshanam, the process of seeing the absolute. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Whenever a person experiences, by self-realization, that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Please repeat. Whenever a person experiences, by self-realization, that both the gross and subtle bodies have nothing to do with the pure self, at that time he sees himself as well as the Lord. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The difference between self-realization and material illusion is to know that the temporary or illusory impositions of material energy in the shape of the gross, in the shape of gross and subtle bodies, are superficial coverings of the self. The coverings take place due to ignorance. Such coverings are never effective in the person of the personality of Godhead. Knowing this convincingly is called liberation, or seeing the absolute. This means that perfect self-realization is made possible by adoption of godly or spiritual life. Self-realization means becoming indifferent to the needs of the gross and subtle bodies, and becoming serious about the activities of the self. The impetus for activities is generated from the self, but such activities become illusory due to ignorance of the real position of the self. By ignorance, self-interest is calculated in terms of the gross and subtle bodies, and therefore a whole set of activities is spoiled. By a whole set of activities spoiled means potential activities is spoiled. Life after life. In other words, the potential is never realized. When, however, one meets the self by proper culture, the activities of the self begin. Therefore, a man who is engaged in the activities of the self is called Jivan Mukta, or a liberated person, even in the conditioned existence. It doesn't mean he's conditioned, but he's in an environment in which just about everybody else is conditioned. But he's God realized. He's a Jivan Mukta, a soul who is liberated. The perfect stage of self-realization is attained not by artificial means, but under the lotus feet of the Lord, who is always transcendental. I'm going to read that again because it's so important. The perfect stage of self-realization is attained not by artificial means, but under the lotus feet of the Lord, who is always transcendental. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that he is present in everyone's heart, and from him only all knowledge, remembrances, or forgetfulness take place. What number verse is that? Come on. 15 what? Okay. The best way to wake up an audience is to ask a question. So, when the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy or illusory phenomena Again, desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, and not to, it just happens, but there's some interest, there's concern, there's desire. When the living being desires to be an enjoyer of material energy, illusory phenomena, the Lord covers the living being in the mystery of forgetfulness. And thus the living being misinterprets the gross body and subtle mind to be his own self. And by culture of transcendental knowledge, when the living being prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgetfulness, the Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes the living being's illusory curtain, and thus he realizes his own self. Question. So when does the living entity start to pray for this deliverance? When? Raise your hand. Go ahead. Whoever blurted out can talk now. Huh? In the what? And the what is he saying? Okay. No, that's not the time. In other words, he's in illusion. He's in ignorance. He's in something which causes him to start his spiritual life. We've all had this experience. It's pain and suffering. When we begin to suffer in pain and we can't get rid of it, we've gone here, we've gone there, we've gone everywhere, and still the pain and suffering persists. What do we do? Where do we go? When we have nowhere else to go, we go to Krishna. My Lord, I don't even know if you exist or not, but right now I'm at the last bottom of the barrel. I'm at my last wit. So if you do exist, please help me to overcome this horrible, terrible, tormenting situation. And lo and behold, the Lord comes through. So that begins the first stage or the first step of faith, that it happened. But it's not full faith. It's not complete faith. It's not total faith. It's fractional faith, which can be built upon so that the faith becomes greater and greater. So another situation may arise. And again, that particular living entity prays and prays and gets the result. So Krishna is giving him a or her a sample of his magnanimity, his kindness, his grace, his affection, in the form of, it could be a cure, it could be a resolution to a problem, it could be a business which has been failing, now suddenly turns around and begins succeeding. It could be any one of these things, but it gives the living entity some new faith, some new hope, some new possibility, some new optimism, which before he didn't. He felt completely depressed. So that is one of the ways Krishna works. He waits until we come to that point, and then he begins to do his magic. So I'm going to start from the beginning of the purport, and there are many ideas to cover. I didn't finish it. Sorry about that. Yeah. Okay, if I can find that. Yes. He then engages him. Let me read the last sentence. When the living being prays to the Lord for deliverance from the clutches of forgetfulness, the Lord, by his causeless mercy, removes the living being's illusory curtain. And thus he realizes his own self. He knows he's not the body. He's not the mind. He's not the intelligence, which we'll discuss in a few moments. He then engages himself in the service of the Lord in his eternal constitutional position, becoming liberated from the conditioned life. So once a person begins to acquire a little faith, there, as we know, there are 9 stages. You know, a person gains faith, then he associates with devotees, then his he gets initiated, and then his bad habits begin to disappear, and so forth. There are stages in which a person continues to develop and grow in faith and in love and in surrender and submission. So all this leads to not just liberation, but really, ideally, Krishna prema, or pure love of God. So allow me to go back to the beginning of the purport. Oh, good. You can just see how eager I am to get my false ego out there. All this is executed by the Lord either through his external potency or directly by the internal potency. Is there any more on the page that I'm not seeing? Okay. Okay, so going back to the purport, you can leave it on the screen because I'm going to be taking it sentence by sentence. The difference between self-realization and material illusion, well, let me say Om Agyana Timirandasya Kenanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmaritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I offer my humble obeisances unto His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. The difference between self-realization and material illusion is to know that the temporary illusory impositions of material energy in the shape of gross and subtle bodies are superficial coverings of the self. Yes, they're just, Prabhupada calls them superficial. They're superficial in the sense that they're not permanent. They can be easily removed by the proper devotion and dedication, the practices that go with them, such as hearing about the Lord, chanting about the Lord, remembering Krishna, serving his lotus feet. All these have the power, the ability to remove these gross and subtle bodies in the sense that instead of identifying with them, we begin to identify with who we really are. So the coverings take place due to ignorance. We come into this world. When we're in the womb, we have some knowledge in the last month or two as to who we are. We even make a promise. This is in the teachings of Lord Kapila, for those who want to further reference it. We then make a promise that we will dedicate ourselves to the self-realization, God-realization. Then we're born, and then we come into the environment of parents and relatives and friends, and and everyone is comforting us, helping us, praising us, loving us, tickling us, and whatever, to make us feel good. And slowly but surely, we forget our original promise that we made while we were in the womb. And that promise is the promise that I will continue to further myself in God realization by taking shelter of you. And by taking shelter of you, that means taking shelter of the pure devotees who serve you. And by taking shelter of them, I become purified because I get connected, I get related to you, O Supreme Lord. So please protect me. So the Lord is there as a super soul in the heart, ready to give protection as soon as we ask. But as soon as we become enamored of all of the activities in the material world that are going on, we lose our focus. We lose our direction. We lose the true purpose of life. We find that everyone in the world, everyone around us, mother and father and sister and brother and uncles and aunts and cousins, everyone is striving and somehow wanting to be great, wanting to be big, wanting to be amazing, wanting to be important, wanting to be applauded, wanting to be glorified, and in a word, wanting to be a lord. And that's generally what we're encouraged to do from the time that we're children. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I want to be a policeman, and I want to kill all those thugs out there, you see. So the child, he learns to try to be somebody, a hero, someone who's recognized, someone who's honored, someone who's glorified. This is generally what we're taught, which is the very opposite of what we promised when we were in the womb. When we're in the room, we promised that we were going to pursue what? The glorification of God, not ourselves. The glorification, the honor of God, the service to God, the submission to the Lord, the following of the instructions of God, the displaying or manifesting of the virtues that God tells us to develop, such as kindness, you know, and sweetness, and courage, and strength, and devotion, and dedication, and service. This attitude we're encouraged, but we forget this because it doesn't bring us fame and name and glory and honor and distinction. Now we're on a different path than the one we promised. We're on the path of self-glorification rather than God-glorification. And that is the beginning of lots and lots of trouble, lots of problems. It's very much like a fish that is in the water. And as long as it stays in the water and breathes with its gills, it's comfortable and it's satisfied. But as soon as the fish, you know, with its two bulging eyes, looks out and says, hey, that looks like a pretty nice sight out there. Beautiful mountains and beautiful flowers and beautiful. I think I'm gonna jump and really get a taste of that. So the fish, it jumps out of the water, as we sometimes see, and lands on the dock. And then it's looking, and as it's looking, it's running out of breath, its kind of breath, which it gets from the water. So what does it do? He's uncomfortable. He's displeased. He's pained. So he starts flip-flopping. Why is he flip-flopping? Because he wants to get back to his original environment in which he could live comfortably. But he thought he would be improving, or she thought she would be improving his, her life if he could get out of the water. But it was just the opposite. Getting out of the water was slowly killing the fish. Similarly, by turning away from Krishna, when I say turning away, I mean turning away from serving him, from loving him, honoring him in so many different ways. As I mentioned just a few moments ago, hearing about the Lord is a service. And one of the prime exponents of hearing about the Lord, who is the chief? Well, we all know this. Yes, exactly. Yeah, Parikshit is known as the chief of the listeners. After all, he listened for 7 days and seven nights in a row to this incredible discourse, which we call the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then there was the chanting. Who's known as the greatest of... Chanting is another form of service. When we chant or even listen to the chant... Huh? Shukdev Goswami? Yes. Shukdev Goswami is... He's speaking on the Bhagavatam for 7 days and seven nights. That's no small deal. I have a trouble for 1 hour. But he's speaking 7 days and one and 7 nights. So we see hearing and chanting. And now how about remembering the Lord? Who is known for remembering the Lord? His name starts with, if my memory served me right, P? Yes, Prahlad Maharaj. Excellent. So the next, then we go to hearing, chanting, remembering, and then we come to the next, serving the lotus feet. Who serves the lotus feet with par excellence? Who? Lakshmi Devi, yes. So she's known, because she's always massaging the feet of Lord Vishnu, and she's a perfect massager. She didn't have to go to school for that. It comes all from her loving devotion to the Lord. So we have serving the lotus feet of the Lord, hearing, chanting, remembering, worshiping. Yeah, we have, well, yes, worshiping the Lord. So who is known for his expert worship of the Lord? I think it's someone else. Starts with a P, doesn't it? Huh? Prithu Maharaj. Yeah, that's my recollection. If I'm wrong, I'll come back tomorrow and tell you. But I was uncertain about that. So, okay, so we get to a worship, offering prayers. Everybody knows that. Akrura, yes. So Akrura is known. And when do we get an opportunity to hear the greatness of the way that he prays? When do we get that opportunity in this Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto? When he's traveling on a mission for King Kamsa, to try and obtain or gain Krishna and Balaram to come to Mathura so that he can hopefully kill them. So, well, Akrura, he happens to be the uncle of Krishna and Balaram, and he also is a devotee of them. And he's so happy, he's so pleased, he's so uplifted, he feels so elevated that he's getting an opportunity to go and visit his nephews, who he knows is the Supreme Lord. And in that mood, in that understanding, he's thinking like that, wow, I'm getting closer and closer to Vrindavan. Soon I will see Krishna and Balaram. And when I see them, my eyes will tear because of the happiness that I'll be feeling. I'm getting closer. I can see their footsteps on the sand. He jumps out of the chariot and he throws himself on the sand there, and he rolls in the dust, feeling so happy, so exalted, so ecstatic that he's able to touch the dust that Krishna has walked upon, Balaram has walked upon. And then he again begins to utter, I don't remember those prayers, but they take the direction, they take the sense of how fortunate I am. In millions of lives, billions of lives, people do not get the opportunity to touch the dust that Krishna has touched with his feet. And here I am rolling in that dust. How great is my life? How fulfilled is my life? How satisfied I feel? How happy I am? So he has all this. So he's known for his... By the way, this is a cheap imitation, what I'm doing. If you really want to get it, you go to the Krishna book and get to that particular chapter. In fact, what I have done, and a number of devotees have done, when they go to India, you know, when you get on the taxi, which takes you from New Delhi Airport to Vrindavan, that's the time I usually open up the book. It's dark, so bring a flashlight. So, and then I start to read it aloud, and the cab driver, he gets a chance to hear it also, until he stops for tea, as we all know, and he takes his half-hour break and then gets back in. He has to listen to this wonderful discourse, this wonderful group, barrage of prayers. So, okay, Akrura is known for praying, and then there is friendly association. Who is known as an adult? There are two types of friendship. There's childhood friendship and then there's adult friendship. So on the adult level, who is known as the chief of the friends of Krishna? Arjun, yes. And who is known amongst the kiddies as the chief? Sudama. Yeah, that's mentioned in the life of Tulsi Devi, it comes out. So then we have the surrender of body, mind, and speech. Who is famous, who is well known for this particular area of devotional service? Yes, Bali Maharaj. So therefore we have a group of great souls whom we can read about. We can read their words, we can read the description of their actions, and we can try to emulate them in the sense that we can understand that these persons were so highly recognized and highly adored and highly respected by the Supreme Lord, that if we try to at least do what they did, hear, chant, remember, serve the lotus feet, worship, offer prayers, we do all of those things, then what will happen? And it relates directly to what I'm reading here. What will happen is that the identification that we have, which is called false ego, the identification that we have with the body, I am this body, this is me, which is an illusion, which is wrong, which is untrue, we're not the body. That illusion, which comes from ignorance and comes from a desire to want to, what? Lord it over this material world. As long as we want to be lords of the material world, then we use the body to do that, the physical body, and we use the mind, and we use the emotions, and we use the imagination, and we use the thinking ability, and we use the reasoning ability, the intelligence. So all these are the instruments which we have to help us to attain, to achieve this false sense of godhood, this false sense of lordship. We may have it, but it is false in the sense that it is temporary. Yes, for 5 years, 10 years, we may be looked at as lords. Everyone salutes us. Everyone glorifies us, honors us. But then karma may change. For example, we have in the news going on now, I don't know how many of you are aware of it, but we have this great, not great, but very well-known producer, Harvey Weinstein. So he was celebrated for the many wonderful movies that he produced, many Academy Awards. But now it has come out in the newspaper that basically he was sexually harassing and molesting different women over the years who never came forth because they were afraid that they wouldn't get a part in one of his next movies, you see. So now everything turns down. Now there's all sorts of lawsuits by the millions and millions of dollars. Before he was on the up, now all going down. So a person is thinking, oh, they'll never complain. Why does he think that these ladies would never complain? Because he was so powerful. And he felt that if they said anything, he could have them virtually thrown out of the industry. But that's not what Krishna had in mind. When it's time for the karmic cookie to crumble, Krishna takes over. And persons come forth. And then one says something. And it reminds me of like a bowling alley. You know, one pin gets knocked down, then it knocks another down, and then another knocks another down. Before you know it, you got almost all the pins are down. So similarly, the first woman who made her complaint, that raised another complaint from another lady and another lady and another. Before you know, I think there are at least 75, 80 women who have made very, very firm complaints and plan to sue him for millions of dollars. And some of them were settled out of court with him. So my point is this, is that a person becomes powerful, may become glorified, may become honored, may be applauded. It is meaningless because it's here today and it's gone tomorrow. And once it's gone, it's gone. When we die, we definitely leave it. Or it may leave us before we die. And how depressing that is, that when we've been known and famous and glorified and honored, when we walk down the street, oh, there's so-and-so. Oh, there, excuse me, sir, click, click, click. Can I get your picture? Can I get your autograph? And you're so exalted with this sense of importance and power and greatness. And then all gone. Somebody replaces us. And people are not writing about us, not talking about us. Facebook is bereft of our name. So it's a big takedown. And nobody cares for me. Nobody wants me anymore. And what do they do? How do they deal with this? OxyContin. That's the latest. Drugs. Heroin. Cocaine. Crack cocaine. Marijuana, free. You can go on the streets now and buy it. The government is now supporting, helping us to forget our miseries and taking money and taxes from this and continuing to vote for these horrible situations where people can go and have these things free. Now, it has become a big epidemic in Virginia and Ohio. People from the middle class becoming drug addicts. This was unheard of in my time in the 1940s and 1950s. Out of the question. The only person who did that, they're basically criminally minded persons. But now, ordinary, regular, working class people, they go, and now they have 10 different doctors. They get a prescription from each of the doctors for OxyContin. It's a legal drug, and it's a painkiller. And then they go, one, finish that bottle today, and here's another prescription, finish that bottle. 10, then it's epidemic proportion. They're addicted. Some of them, there's a drug that's passing now, fentanyl. That is 100 times more powerful than heroin. So you can see what's happening to this population. It's not going to be killed by North Korea. It's going to be killed by OxyContin. It's not a joke. It's absolutely true. This is going on. We're seeing thousands in Ohio, in one of the cities, 26 persons every day ODing, overdosing. These were people who have families, have jobs, have dogs, have cats, have little salamanders as pets, who, nice people you said, have a nice day, good morning. And now they're completely shrouded in this horrible addiction, which they can't get out. Of course, Mr. Trump is promising to set up these recovery places, but let's see if that's not the answer. Those things are only palliative. Palliative means you can relieve somebody, but you don't destroy the cause. The cause is what I'm talking about right here, which Srila Prabhupada is hammering on, purport after purport after purport. Who are we? As long as you think you're your body, and as long as you think it is incumbent upon us that we must be big and great and glorious and magnificent, we're in trouble. Many people, because they're not big shots, they don't win races or they don't win spelling bees, they take their lives. Or they take these drugs or they become alcoholics. Because they can't stand this defeat. We're made to believe from an early age that you're worthless, you're useless, you're good for nothing if you're not a leader. Like our president, when somebody points out something wrong in him, he denies it. Because he always wants to be thought of as being truthful, being great. I make no mistakes. I'm infallible. This is the mentality. Actually, a devotee is the very opposite. If he makes a mistake, he's glad to own up to it, because if he owns up to it, he can overcome it. Otherwise, it's just a perpetual motion. There was one, we had one guru, I won't mention names, is that he was a pathological liar. And whenever he would say this, and then I remember confronting the person, I said, you know, you said this, going back about a month ago, and now it's the very opposite. He said, well, I have an answer for that. Don't worry about it. I said, when will I get my answer? He says, don't worry. You'll get it. I'm still waiting. 30 years, I haven't gotten the answer. So the point is this. By the way, some of these people do change, though, and I don't want to make it seem that it's a permanent fixture. So the important point that I do want to make at this point is that the answer to all of this, as Prabhupada is saying here, is that we have to overcome this false sense of self. I'm not the body. I'm not my mind. I'm not my intelligence. I'm the spirit soul within. And being the spirit soul within, that is who I am, and I am part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. And when I am conscious of the fact that I am part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, and I act in that understanding, which is to serve the Supreme Soul, to honor the Supreme Soul, to love the Supreme Soul, to glorify the Supreme Soul, to bow down to the Supreme Soul, to do all this and so much more in utter forgetfulness of me, this body, this mind, and this intelligence. Forget those and use those as instruments for Krishna's pleasure. And if we do that and Krishna is pleased, he will bless us. And how does he bless us? He blesses us with transcendental bliss, transcendental peace, transcendental strength, transcendental love. When we have those qualities infused into our being, there is no depression. There is no dejection. There is no feeling of worthlessness. When we're connected to the Supreme Lord consciously, how can we feel inferior? We're connected to the most powerful, the greatest, the highest, the best. So there's a feeling of complete fulfillment, satisfaction. And in that satisfaction and fulfillment, we are truly and genuinely and always happy, not temporarily happy because we won a contest or somebody praised us or somebody bowed down to us or somebody glorified us. No, it's permanent. And not only is it permanent, but like an ocean wave, it keeps getting higher and higher and higher and higher until finally we're just full, filled, completely with transcendental bliss and love and happiness. Due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that's why we're here, the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna, who has brought Prabhupada here, and let us all try to be worthy, although we cannot ever really be worthy, but we should strive to be worthy of the mercy that we have received. And in striving to be mercy, striving to be qualified for that which we have received, this will please Krishna, this will please Prabhupada, and in turn, he will continue to drown us in that loving mercy, which will give us the strength, the determination, the joyfulness and happiness to go on serving, loving, honoring, and glorifying him. So I've gone way over. I'm sorry about that. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki.
Así, muy rápido. ¿Hasta dónde trabajan?